Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Millions of Americans and Pennsylvanians are battling some form of mental illness. Statistics may not be reliable because many people try to hide their mental illness, don't seek treatment, or even talk to anyone about their challenges because there is a stigma sometimes attached to mental illness. Those that do seek treatment often don't have access, insurance, or can't afford treatment. In response, the Wolf Administration has launched an all-out mental health campaign to provide resources and outreach to those who may struggle with long or short-term mental health issues. The initiative is called Reach Out PA, Your Mental Health Matters. Joining us on today's program to discuss the initiative and mental health overall is Pennsylvania's Secretary of the Department of Human Services, Teresa Miller. Secretary Miller, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us today is Dan German, Executive Director of the Office of Advocacy and Reform. Mr. German, good to see you this morning.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
And Govan Martin, I should mention that one of the things we'll be discussing is suicide. The Governor's Suicide Prevention Task Force issued its first report earlier this month after listening to what Pennsylvanians had to say about suicide. Govan Martin is the Executive Director of Prevent Suicide PA. Govan Martin, good to see you this morning.
Thanks, Scott.
And joining us on the telephone, yes, we have a full house today. Joining us on the telephone is Democratic State Representative Michael Schlossberg of Lehigh County. He's co-founder and chair of the House Mental Health Caucus. Representative Schlossberg, glad to hear from you today.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott. I appreciate the phone call, too.
I understand you have some illness going through your household right now.
I have a sick little girl who's curled up on the couch watching Netflix, but I really appreciate you folks being so accommodating.
Well, thank you very much. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WYTF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Miller, Reach Out PA, Your Mental Health Matters. How would you describe this initiative?
So this initiative actually follows a number of previous governor-led initiatives, including the Opioid Command Center, the Council to Reduce Gun Violence, and the Suicide Prevention Task Force that you mentioned. All of those efforts called out mental health as a really significant issue that impacts so many Pennsylvanians. And all you have to do is look at the reaction that we got to the announcement of the Suicide Prevention Task Force last year, the announcement of this mental health initiative. The reaction we get from the public tells us this is a huge issue that just has an enormous impact on so many people. And while we're really focused on making sure that we have, that people have access to quality treatment options, one of the themes of all of these prior initiatives is if we don't address the stigma around mental health, we can have the best mental health system in the world, and it's not going to matter because people are not going to seek the treatment they need. So this initiative, Reach Out PA, Your Mental Health Matters, is about highlighting some of the work that's going on today to try to improve our mental health system. But equally important, it's really an outreach campaign. It is the start of a public conversation about how it's okay to reach out. The governor wants, this entire administration wants people to know it's not a sign of weakness to reach out and ask for help. We've got to address that stigma. We've got to get to a place where people feel comfortable talking about their mental health issues. Part of this initiative is about putting mental health on the same equal footing as physical health. We need to address the whole person, and we need to make sure in every setting we are really taking into account everything going on with a person, and that means making sure that mental health is elevated and treated like physical health.
I have to admit, as I wrote these notes to myself, it's kind of sad that when you list all these things, but there is a shortage of mental health professionals, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the country. Long waits to get an appointment if you want treatment. Mental illness is not easy to diagnose. It's not like you can go in and get a blood test for high cholesterol or something like that. But just what you described, the stigma, people don't talk about mental health. Often they're hesitant to talk about their own mental health. Others are afraid to bring it up or even acknowledge with a friend or a loved one because of that stigma. I mean, one of the stories, and I've told this many times and I told it on the air, but the father of a young woman who suffers from mental illness said that if his daughter had cancer, you know, if his daughter had a heart disease, that she fell, had an injury, that friends and neighbors, family would stop into the house, maybe bring dinner, say, is there anything we can do? Reach out and say anything we do. But it's not that way with a mental illness. No one talks about it. That stigma, even though, as I said, what's sad about it is there are a lot of challenges there, but that stigma is one of the biggest challenges.
That's exactly what we've heard in all these previous efforts, particularly in the Suicide Prevention Task Force. We did 10 listening sessions back in the fall, and that was just a recurring theme in every single listening session we heard from the public. If we don't address that stigma, again, as you pointed out, there are a lot of things we need to do to improve our mental health system, and a lot of things we're in the process of trying to do that. But if people won't access the system because of that stigma, none of that matters. So that's why I think the governor wanted to put this issue out there and say, we need to start a public conversation about how we address stigma and how we get to a place where people are as comfortable talking about mental health issues as they are talking about their cancer or their hip replacement or any other physical health issue that they may have.
Representative Schlossberg, you are someone who speaks publicly about your own mental health challenges. You suffer from depression and anxiety. Is this something that you've dealt with your entire life?
Well, thanks, Scott. The answer is probably. I think, like many kids growing up who have had some sort of mental illness, I knew there was something a little bit off. I always say I was that kid that cried a little too easily or who was wound a little bit too tight. My issues really exploded in college. It's actually a pretty common story. About 75% of people who have some sort of mental illness have it onset before they turn 24, and 50% actually have it onset between 18 and 24. So my experience was relatively common. You go to college, you're in a new place surrounded by new people in a new environment, ripped away from everything you knew and love, and that can really trigger a lot of stress. It's something that I have dealt with certainly my entire adult life. As you said, I've been for the past 5 years pretty honest and open about my own struggles with depression, with anxiety, with suicidality. I take medication, I see a therapist, and I do all of these things in order to lead a good life. And despite these things, I do lead a good life. It's a chronic illness. It's something that I periodically have to deal with. But part of my overall message as an elected official has been to people that they have to understand that most mental illnesses are eminently treatable. And that if we can help get people into treatment and treat them with the love and respect they deserve, you can lead a good and happy life despite any emotional challenges.
You wrote about your depression and anxiety in an op-ed that was in the Allentown Morning Call. And you admitted, from what I understand, that you were angry at the time when you wrote it. You weren't thinking about politics and that kind of thing. But you said you were surprised by the reaction that you got.
I really was. So my op-ed came out after the suicide of Robin Williams. Some idiot that I was Facebook friends with put something on Facebook along the lines of, oh, so sad he killed himself, he just needed more faith in Jesus. And I was so infuriated by that one stupid Facebook status that I wrote an op-ed describing my own challenges, and that reshaped my entire career. More importantly, I hope, is that I added something to the public conversation. I was just pissed off. It was as simple as being angry. But what happened as a result of that op-ed was more people approached me than I ever anticipated about their own challenges, saying, thank you. It's nice to have a public voice with some credibility, which I hope I have, talking about their own struggles. And that was really illuminating for me. I had no idea just how many people hid their own challenges in a way that you don't hide physical challenges.
You know, just an observation. It seems as though, and I think a lot of these observations are coming from social media, but when someone does come out and say publicly that this is something I have dealt with for a long time, suffer from this mental illness, I have considered suicide, that there's overwhelming support. And that would seem to be good news for reducing the stigma if I don't know, it seems as though.
No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you don't want to put the onus on the person who is suffering through mental illness, but again, the observation has been that they will get support if they come out and say that this is something I'm dealing with. You considered suicide, didn't you?
I did.
You did.
Freshman year in college, and periodically, random bouts in my life. It's something that I've certainly struggled with, and you know, I'm smart enough, or I've been experienced at this enough to know that when those thoughts start to crowd in your head, okay, it's time to go back into therapy, talk with your therapist, figure out what's going on and how to manage that.
Govan Martin, you've been on our program several times talking about suicide. You were head of the governor's suicide task force, released its preliminary findings as well. What were the major recommendations? You're shaking your head. You weren't head of that?
No, that's Teresa.
That was the secretary. Okay, well.
He was very involved.
I figured he would be. Okay, I figured he would be. But so the major recommendations of that task force.
Well, I'll let Teresa talk about the task force. I'll talk more about what Prevent Suicide PA is doing. So Teresa has all those and deserves the accolades that we've done already with the suicide task force.
Okay, so the recommendations.
So what we released, I think it was just last week, was a sort of a initial report of what we found in the task force. And then we will be releasing, the whole point of this task force was to really get public input into our statewide suicide prevention plan that we will be submitting to the federal government here early or mid this year. And we're going to be releasing that bigger plan here in the next several weeks, I think, and then putting it out for public comment. And then we'll get feedback and then ultimately be submitting it. But I think some of the major sort of issues that we heard about in these listening sessions included, as we've already talked about, the need to reduce stigma associated with mental health, suicide, and suicide attempts, to really foster a more supportive environment like we've talked about. Eliminating barriers in the mental and physical health system that create challenges for people seeking treatment, helping Pennsylvanians navigate the healthcare system so that people needing treatment understand their eligibility, their coverage options, et cetera. Analyzing available mental health suicide attempt and suicide data. So there was a lot of talk about we need better data to understand what's really going on. Supporting the mental health workforce to facilitate training, support retention work, and address treatment access and geographical challenges. Supporting educators and other adults working in schools with resources and training so they can identify and support students who might be in crisis or experiencing mental health challenges. Working with the General Assembly to advance legislation that enhances and supports suicide prevention efforts. And then continuing to engage with groups who may be more likely to be affected by suicide, so population-specific strategies can be developed around those populations.
So a lot of what the Suicide Task Force recommended or in the initial report dovetails well or overlaps with the Reach Out campaign as well. So Govan, Prevent Suicide PA, what are you doing?
Well, basically, since we formed 2 years ago officially, we've done a lot of training within the community. We engage with the community because there's a lot of people who are obviously having thoughts of suicide, but also others that have lost suicide or attempted suicide. In fact, this week, unfortunately, 40 years ago, I think on the 30th, my brother died by suicide. So I walked in here thinking it's my anniversary week or my brother's anniversary week.
Something you'll never forget. I mean, the dates and things that trigger memories, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And so, but those kind of things obviously stay with people. And some loss survivors, there's four times the higher risk that they may actually attempt suicide as well. So we're doing lots of trainings, engaging with the community awareness events, conference with national speakers. We want to really tackle this because there is a huge stigma. And one of the things we were discussing earlier, not just with the public, but also the stigma exists in the mental health field. I've done lots of trainings with clinicians and mental health professionals. And one of the questions that I always ask them is if you were actually thinking about suicide yourself, who would you turn to? And so usually I have 20 to 30% that will say, I wouldn't turn to anybody, which is kind of scary.
Wow.
So, again, that stigma exists even in the mental health field. So we need to do a lot more work into just getting people talking and getting people to actually think about getting help for themselves.
Dan German, you're the executive director of the Office of Advocacy and Reform. Talk about how your department is involved in this.
So our overall charge from the governor's executive order back in July of last year is to focus on protection of vulnerable populations, especially those that are receiving state services, and prevention work to try and help people who can avoid using those services in the first place when possible to get preventive help. And so for Reach Out PA, our focus area is going to be around trauma-informed care and adverse childhood experiences. And essentially, the intersection of some of these behavioral and physical health issues. So we know, for instance, that about half of all Pennsylvanians have at least one adverse childhood experience. About 38% have experienced either child abuse, physical child abuse, or emotional child abuse. And the effects of that, we know from the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study that the Centers for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente did back in the 90s, that that leads to all sorts of adverse physical health outcomes.
It's a vulnerable population.
Absolutely. So if you've experienced ACEs, your chances of heart disease, stroke, suicide, substance abuse all go up. But then also some things that you wouldn't expect. Cancer, not just cancers from smoking. You know, some people say, well, yeah, cancer risk would go up because you have all this stress from being abused and so you smoke. But cancers that are not linked to smoking at all, your risk goes up. And in fact, if you've had six or more adverse childhood experiences, your life expectancy is 20 years less than someone who's had none.
Wow.
If you don't have any opportunities for bringing resilience factors into your life. And so it can be devastating, lifelong. I personally have 7 of the 10. And these 10, you can find them on the Centers for Disease Control website. There's a survey you can take to see how many you've had. I took the survey back in 2013. And they include physical abuse and neglect, emotional abuse and neglect, something as commonplace as divorce, being sexually molested as a child, domestic violence in your household, the incarceration of a parent, or drug abuse, substance abuse in your household. So all of these tend to take a cumulative toll. And there's a great book by Matthew Bennett called Connecting Paradigms that I just recently read. And he gives one of the best examples of describing how this works. Essentially, your fight or flight response kicks in to protect you. It's one of those things that's been with us, you know, since our days as cave people. And it kicks in to protect you from immediate dangers. But something happens when that response kicks in day after day because of abuse or neglect. And so imagine you're walking along and you see a stick next to a bush. And as you get closer, you realize that stick is actually a poisonous snake. Well, your fight or flight response kicks in, your body fills with cortisol and adrenaline, your brain is trying to protect you so you can either fight or run away. And the next time you're walking and you see a bush with a stick next to it, your brain doesn't know that it's not going to be a snake this time. And it still kicks in that adrenaline release and that cortisol release. So after a while, that starts to change brain development. And you start to see snakes everywhere. And that's what happens for kids that experience abuse and neglect, is that they start to see abuse. Their brain starts to protect them from abuse in places that are innocuous, like school teachers, or someone who just raises their voice the wrong way or stands too close to them. And we tend to label folks with behaviors in those instances. We see detentions in schools, suspensions, as opposed to understanding that there's an involuntary response happening inside that person. They might lose their job, they might get kicked out of school because of something they had no control over. Because when that protection kicks in, the part of your brain that's in charge of higher function, decision-making, and self-regulation is literally shut off in all of us. We're all the same. And so understanding that is a big piece of what my office needs to do, is helping others understand that that's what's going on, that these aren't necessarily bad kids or bad adults, that there's something happening inside them that's involuntary, and we can help them control that, but we have to know it's happening first. Mm-hmm. And that's where that stigma piece comes in.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. For more information on mental health plus a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health online at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross. We're talking about Governor Wolf's initiative. It's called Reach Out PA, Your Mental Health Matters. It's a number of different parts to this initiative. We'll try to break them down here in a few minutes, but we're getting phone calls and some emails, and I definitely want to get to those in just a few minutes. Our guest today, Pennsylvania's Secretary of the Department of Human Services, Teresa Miller, State Representative, Democratic State Representative Michael Schlossberg of Lehigh County. He's co-founder and chair of the House Mental Health Caucus. Dan German is Executive Director of the Office of Advocacy and Reform, and Govan Martin, Executive Director of Prevent Suicide PA. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Lancaster. Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What's your question or comment?
My question is, well, let me just give you a very brief kind of overview of my experience. My main advocacy is trying to destigmatize mental illness. And so I'm very appreciative of, you know, your program, of the Reach Out PA initiative, and, you know, your guests trying to bring this to light. In 2015, October of 2015, I began kind of a downward spiral, sometimes referred to as down the rabbit hole, and I went to my primary care physician, and I was given a checklist, for a bipolar checklist. The physician said, it appears you might have bipolar. Here is a bottle, a prescription for Seroquel. It should help you sleep. I hadn't been sleeping. I was ruminating and just in my head completely. And so I left with the prescription. I came back about a week and a half later, saw someone else. They sent me out the door with something else. And unfortunately, despite the fact that I had an incredible support system, I got a bottle of sleeping pills, and I ingested all of them. I didn't want to. I did try to spit them up. I could hear my parents on the answering machine. They were concerned about me, and I couldn't get to the answering. I couldn't get to the phone. So I was 5 minutes from death. I was I'm very fortunate to be here. And through, you know, this was December of 2015, and I had lost 40 pounds, and I had not slept more than maybe 30 hours during those 2 months. And I, over the next 2 years, did, you know, I was in and out of inpatient and outpatient and so on and so forth. And only at Lancaster Regional Medical Center, which is now closed, was I able to get the one-on-one care and therapy that I needed. I did some research on my own, and I discovered I felt that I had borderline personality disorder, which is 75% treatable through therapy, 25% through medication. And finally, at Philhaven, Lancaster, I was diagnosed properly by Dr. Shand. I just want to give a shout out. Within 5 minutes, he said, let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard of borderline personality disorder? I said, oh, yes, doctor, I have. And I was put into a program called Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, which I only would have been able to do through Medicare, because mm-hmm. many private insurances don't cover it.
Hey, Carol, so, I hate again, to interrupt.
My question is, no, I'm sorry. My question is, with this initiative, are you going to be addressing the need for education among primary care physicians and other physicians?
Thank you very much for your call. And first of all, Carol, sorry to hear that you went through this, but I'm happy to hear that you finally did get the diagnosis that was correct. She brings up several points that, and it's something that, as I mentioned in the introduction, that often it is hard to diagnose a mental illness, because there is not, I mean, you have to rely on a lot of verbal information, description of what's going on from family, from friends, even from the patient themselves. But the point she brings up about education with family physicians, what about that? Is that part of this initiative?
So I'm happy to jump in, and then, you know, Dan, or feel free to chime in as well. You know, like with past initiatives, the way we're starting out with this initiative is through a lot of listening sessions and kind of roundtable discussions. And so we have a number of agencies that the governor has brought to the table, but also we're partnering with members of the General Assembly, and we are traveling around the Commonwealth to hear from those impacted, just like the caller, to hear about their mental health concerns, to hear what the issues are so we can figure out how to most effectively address them. So at this point, I think anything can be part of this initiative in terms of where we need to focus. We're hearing from people what the issues are, and then we're going to figure out how we can best address those issues. The governor last week also just announced a website where people can go and share their comments, their thoughts, their suggestions, their concerns, the issues that they've run up against. So all of this is going to be sort of gathering all that information and figuring out how we tackle those issues.
But Dan German, I would say that has to be one of the most important aspects of this. Primary care physicians, probably, many people are told the first time that you don't feel right, go to your family physician. If the family physician is, I don't know, not looking for it or hasn't treated many patients with mental illness, there may not be satisfaction there. So, again, there's a lot to think about here.
There is, and I think there's a lot of work to do to make sure that we're seeing best practices spread across all health systems. So my doctor does do a survey of specific questions on a regular basis. My primary care physician will ask certain questions that are about behavioral health. I have the challenge in listening to Carol. First of all, I want to thank Carol for calling in and for her bravery.
It takes courage. Yeah.
And tell her that the world's a better place because she's still with us. Like her, I've been sort of a chemistry set over the years. I started experiencing alarmingly high blood pressure when I was 12. And my doctor didn't know what to make of it. At one point, with some horrible bedside manner, told me that I'd probably be dead by 30 if I didn't get my blood pressure down, as if I needed to do something to do that. I find myself now, even with the behavioral health survey that I get from my primary care physician, educating them on adverse childhood experiences, because I can link my sleeplessness and my high blood pressure for the last 30 years directly to what happened to me.
It's probably not a question they ask.
It's not. And so a big piece of what the Office of Advocacy and Reform is going to need to do is to get out and create trainings, connect to providers, and make sure that they all know the latest in neurobiology and how this is affecting their patients, to even know to ask the question so they can properly diagnose what's going on.
I want to take a phone call. We have a county commissioner here, Paul Himmel from Potter County. Commissioner, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you for the opportunity to ask my question. I happen to be in town for a comprehensive behavioral health task force meeting, which kicks off in about 20 minutes, and a big focus is going to be on this initiative and other mental health matters. My concern is the lack of mental health, and for that sake, addiction treatment facilities in the criminal justice system. They're about maybe 80% estimated in our rural county of those who are involved in the criminal justice system that are diagnosed with mental illness and or addiction disorders. Woefully underfunded for decades, and the services are woefully inadequate in jails and prisons. I would hope that would be a major focus of this initiative, and I applaud the governor and all others who are pushing this initiative. Long overdue, and very hopeful it will result in some changes. Thank you.
Commissioner, thank you very much for calling in. Representative Schlossberg, I'm going to turn to you with this one first. The commissioner is saying something that I have heard from counties for years now, that there is not enough funding from the state when it comes to mental health treatment facilities. He mentioned substance abuse. So what about that? I mean, if the governor realizes, the administration realizes that this is a big issue, Unfortunately, it cost money, and it cost a lot of money. Is there money, or did your colleagues realize, or is there an appetite to increase funding?
Well, and let me be clear, everything the commissioner said is completely correct. That certainly has been our experience at my home in Lehigh. Back in 2012-2013's budget year, the governor at the time, Governor Corbett, the legislature agreed to a 10% funding cut. Governor Wolf, in his first year, attempted to restore that funding over a multi-year period, which I think was a pretty responsible way to do it, unfortunately got nowhere. And that's, you know, we have to look at ourselves in the mirror and say that's on us. The legislature needs to broadly make mental health and substance abuse treatment a priority. It's as simple as that. I think the bipartisan appetite is starting to exist more. My experience within the Mental Health Caucus has been that we've got more and more Republicans, more and more members of the majority party who are looking around and going, my God, this is our problem too. This is not a Democratic or a Republican problem. This is not an urban, suburban, or rural problem. It's a Pennsylvania problem. And I would actually argue that it affects some of my more conservative rural colleagues more than it affects the more progressive liberal ones. A group of us, 31 members, Democrats and Republicans, signed a letter to the governor urging him to start to restore some of that 10% funding cut. I know that the governor has, over the course of his, I think this will be his sixth budget coming up, addressed some of those line items falling. They haven't been enough, but I don't blame the governor for that one. I blame all of us. All of us, especially those of us in the legislature, need to get it together and make mental health funding a priority.
Secretary Miller, part of this initiative is addressing social workers, adding social workers, counselors for school education amongst schools, counselors, social workers. But, you know, something that the commissioner brought up and Representative the Representative Schlossberg brought up as well is that many of these rural small schools don't even have a school nurse, maybe have one counselor. So who are you going to train if you don't have anyone there?
I think as the representative alluded to, in the rural areas, I think you have unique issues and maybe even bigger issues to making sure that we're able to provide the services in the schools so that we can address these issues and make sure the kids in schools have the resources they need. So I think the rural areas are an area that we really need to focus on.
Well, if you would, talk about what is in this initiative to train, to find more social workers, train counselors, and that kind of thing.
So I think Department of Education is working on those issues, and I am probably, Scott, unfortunately, not the best one to talk about that just because...
By the way, this is a multi-agency initiative. It is not just the Department of Human Services.
It is. I mean, I can certainly talk about our pieces of this initiative and what we're focused on, but I'm less familiar with everything all the other agencies are doing.
Representative, I heard you chime in there.
Yeah, there are, I believe that there are actually 10 agencies that are involved in the Suicide Prevention Task Force. I know that the Reach Up PA initiative has been multi-agency as well, and that's good and necessary because as we have conversations about mental health, suicide, and substance abuse, we have to acknowledge a deeper truth, which is that these areas aren't exclusively related to human services. The Suicide Prevention Task Force, Secretary Redding, Secretary of Agriculture attended 4 meetings because, again, rural Americans and farmers are more likely to die by suicide than the rest of the population. And it's really important that we recognize that this goes much broader than just a conversation about mental health, mental illness, or human services funding. This affects so much more than just that.
And Govan, I was curious when we were talking about it. I mean, we know suicide, death by suicide, that it doesn't discriminate. I mean, it is across all racial, ethnic backgrounds, social, economic, all those. But rural areas in Pennsylvania, it seems as though, well, it seems, it is. The fact is, there are fewer resources. Do you see that?
Absolutely. And that's why we need to do a better job of getting the conversation out there. One of the things with education that there is Act 71, which makes sure that all schools actually have 4 hours of education about suicide prevention within 5 years, which isn't really a lot, but it's something. It's a good start. And we're getting out and doing a lot of those trainings to those schools. But you're right, rural areas, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the country, actually are affected the most by suicide. So it's making sure that we have that conversation because, again, mental illness and suicide is one of those things that people don't talk about or are afraid to talk about because of the repercussions that could happen. You know, maybe that their peers will think less of them, that they'll think they're weak, that just have a major problem, or maybe thinking they might lose their job. A lot of those things aren't true, but the stigma is still attached to that, which is why we need to really go out and just have that conversation amongst the masses. That's why those listening sessions were a success.
And, you know, I don't want to paint everyone with a broad brush, but let's face it, a lot of the rural areas are more conservative sometimes than they are progressive or liberal. I would imagine that just what you described in some of those conservative areas, small towns where everybody knows everyone else, knows what's going on in their business and all that, that they may be even less likely to admit that they are going through a mental illness or an issue, and they don't want their neighbors or their friends talking about it.
I think you'll find that in every area, not just rural.
Okay.
I think
all
because
right.
most of the time that, again, people are just afraid to tell somebody that they're having issues, whether it's suicide or other issues such as mental health, is that they're afraid to just bring up the subject that, hey, I need help. And what does that help entail? Well, there's still the stigma of just going to see a mental health professional, mm-hmm. which should be normal. And, you know, I've sought a mental health professional over the years, and it's, we have to make it normal. We have the normal conversation where it's okay not to be okay.
We have a lot of emails coming in. I'm going to get to them here in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. We're talking about mental health and the mental health initiative by the Wolf Administration. Reach out, PA, your mental health matters. Our guest today, Pennsylvania's Department of Human Services Secretary Teresa Miller, Democratic State Representative Michael Schlossberg of Lehigh County, co-founder and chair of the House Mental Health Caucus, Dan German, Executive Director of the Office of Advocacy and Reform, and Govan Martin, Executive Director of Prevent Suicide PA. If you have a question or comment, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We have several emails. I want to make sure I get to them. I'm writing as a retired educator and past mental health and substance abuse counselor, and also subject of 10 years of mental health counseling myself. One important step is trying to make insurance reimbursement equivalent between physical and mental health treatment. My question, have there been any concerted efforts to recruit well-known public figures to acknowledge their own issues with their mental health and subsequent treatment? Role models would probably play a very positive influence in gaining support for your initiatives. Now, there's two different questions there, and I want to start with the important step, trying to make insurance reimbursement equivalent between physical and mental health treatment, because that is a big part of this, right, Secretary Miller?
It is, and actually the insurance department is working on mental health parity. Back when I was the insurance commissioner a few years ago, this was a major priority, ensuring that insurance companies were complying with mental health parity laws. And we started actually some what we called market conduct exams, or basically investigations into insurance companies to make sure they were in fact doing this. And I transitioned over to the Department of Human Services before those sort of investigations or studies were completed. But Commissioner Altman has been able to talk about the results of some of those investigations, and there have been issues around mental health parity and insurance companies not complying with those laws that she's been addressing. So I think this administration takes mental health parity very, very seriously and will continue to do that. And I think Commissioner Altman is looking at doing some regulations around this as well. So this is very much on our radar.
Well, yeah. I mean, stigma is one thing, but if there's someone who says, you know, I really could use some treatment, but I can't afford it, I don't have insurance, they may be, even if they're willing to talk about it, they may not want to because they can't afford it.
Exactly. So this is something we've got to address. I've always thought that with mental health parity in particular, it's hard. It's a very complicated issue for a consumer to see. A consumer is going to have a hard time knowing that their insurance company violated mental health parity, which is why those market conduct exams, I think, were so important, because that's the way we're going to find out if insurance companies are complying with the law.
Mm-hmm. Govan,
you and I, we've spoken before that often I would call you to appear on the program after a high profile suicide like a Robin Williams or something like that. But just what our listener brought up about someone high profile to, it's unfortunate, but many times that's when the public pays attention, is when there's a high-profile person. And you can speak to it from the context of when a high-profile person does take their own life, that's often, I won't say the only time, but it gets more attention.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, with that high-profile suicide, that we also see many more attempts and other suicides that might follow within the week to next 2 weeks that follows. But hopefully, on the positive side, that we know that high-profile celebrities who speak up and speak out about their mental health illnesses obviously has a great initiative into getting others to get help, that people reach out. Recently, I think Billie Eilish, who's a singer now, popular singer, who talks about her mental health issues and also her thoughts about suicide. And we see it not only an increase in social media about that, but we also see an increase in people reaching out to get help themselves.
Another email, Mary called to say that she always felt alone in her illness. And when a social services person pointed out that there are many people struggling with mental illness, she finally understood that she wasn't alone. I think that's a good point, that probably many people think that somehow they're different, they're unique, that they shouldn't be feeling this way, that they're strange, when there are millions of other people out there who are feeling the same way, going through the same thing.
I think that's why we had so many people reach out when we announced the Suicide Prevention Task Force and this mental health initiative, because to your point, there are so many people suffering in silence that when all of a sudden somebody talks about this issue, they think, okay, this is okay to talk about. I've just been suffering in silence. And I think we have a lot of Pennsylvanians that have been suffering in silence for a long time.
Another email says, I was in a mental health crisis on my way to the hospital when he was stopped by the police. He suffered injuries when the police pulled him physically from the car. He's still dealing with the physical effects of the event and wants to know what, if any, training first responders receive to help people dealing with a mental health event. This is a big issue because you're a police officer. Now they're getting more training, but first responders often don't know whether someone is going through a mental health crisis or not.
Yeah,
right?
We've got to do more around that. As I said earlier, when you're being triggered to re-experience the trauma that you went through in your childhood, the part of your brain that can follow directions literally shuts down. You can't follow directions when you've been triggered. And so if there's a person with a gun screaming at you to do something, you're going to look like you're non-compliant or resisting in some way if you've experienced adverse childhood experiences. And your brain is just trying to protect you from something that it's seen as something that's a warning sign that something bad is about to happen.
So when you say we have to do a better job, what do you mean?
We have to train people. This is new science. So I don't mean to denigrate what's been happening in the past, but as we know these things, it becomes imperative, especially on offices like mine, to get out there and speak to people in law enforcement and corrections about what we know now. It's okay to have not known it before any of us knew it, but now that we know new things about brain science, and these things come out all the time, we have to stay ahead of it. We have to keep updating the way that we're training.
Go ahead, Martin.
As a former first responder, it's absolutely changed from when I was in state police, 1983 until now. In fact, since I retired 7 years ago and got in full-time into suicide prevention, I trained lots of first responders on how to deal with suicidality and how to talk to people. But there still needs a lot more work to be done. And because technically, you know, we don't know what we're coming to. A lot of the times, as far as the response, and we learn about it in the aftermath. If we know, you know, coming to the scene, what's going on, then we'll act appropriately. However, you know, safety is a priority for both the person that has mental illness and for the officer themselves.
Mm-hmm. Something else, we had Secretary of Corrections John Wetzel on the program last week. We were talking about the high percentage of people who were incarcerated who are suffering from mental illness. I mean, and unfortunately, as the secretary said, that many of our jails are where people who are suffering from mental illness are getting their treatment. So a lot of what we're talking about is preventative, that you deal with this issue, maybe there are other problems you don't have to deal with down the line, as well as that person getting healthy. We have a comment here from a listener who says there should be a mental health component to well care visits beginning in infancy. Very early parameters may not exist, but the point is the normalization of the process should eliminate the stigma. The operative word is health. Stop treating it separately. What do you think?
Yeah, my as I said, my provider does that at all my annual visits at least. There's a specific survey that Penn Medicine, Lancaster General Health came up with as a part of an initiative called Speak Up Lancaster that was focused on trying to do the same things we're trying to do with Reach Out PA. And I would say it's incumbent on us to look for where a lot of these grassroots movements are happening that are aligned with what we're trying to do. And that's what some of these roundtables are about, is getting our hands around what's already happening, what are the biggest concerns and the barriers, and how do we get these movements to be universal across the entire state. Secretary Miller has been working on an initiative to have universal data collection across the Commonwealth, so we're able to see what's going on with a person and not have to guess the first time that we see them.
Another email. I work for the Capital Area Intermediate Unit in the preschool program. I have heard discussion about school-age programs, but mental health concerns occur prior to school-age students. Will the early intervention system be part of this initiative? Finding providers that will diagnose and or provide mental health therapies for children in the 3 to 6 year old range is very difficult to find.
Yeah. There have been a series of efforts to try to expand early intervention, but as with everything, frankly, that we deal with in state government, fundamentally it all comes back to funding. I had a bill, bipartisan bill, I worked out. This prime sponsor was Representative Toohill, Republican out of Carbon County. It was also sponsored in the Senate by Senators Barlotta and Schwenk, that would expand the early intervention program to allow for postpartum depression screenings and then to judge the impact that that had not only on the mother, but on the child. We got a pilot program done, but that was about it. And again, it comes down to a lack of funding. We've had conversations about early intervention and expanding it, but again, I think it's something we can and should do more of.
I talked about access very early on. That's right at the top of the list of this initiative. One of the challenges that Pennsylvania, and really I don't think this is a Pennsylvania problem, this is a national issue, is that we have a shortage of healthcare practitioners. And if someone wants an appointment with a psychiatrist, for example, they may have to wait a month, 2 months, and by that time, they could have gone through crisis multiple times. Secretary Miller, what do we do about that?
This is a huge issue, and as you point out, it's not just a Pennsylvania issue. This is a national issue. I know one of the initiatives that the Department of Health has been working on is loan repayment programs. So, you know, people come out of school and go practice psychology, and they've got huge debts. So if we can find ways through loan repayment to encourage people to locate in areas in Pennsylvania where we have the greatest need, I think that's certainly one of the things we can do. But This is a tough issue, and it's one we hear about everywhere. So we've got to figure out better ways to address it.
Even, and this is kind of recent, hospital emergency rooms that didn't quite know how to handle it. We all have probably heard horror stories about someone in a mental health crisis that had gone to the emergency room, sat for a few hours, and decided to leave because of not seeing a doctor. Now, there have been improvements in that area, but is more improvement needed?
I think absolutely. I think one of the initiatives that we are really focused on that is certainly part of this overall mental health initiative is doing a better job of integrating physical and behavioral health. Because again, if somebody's showing up at the emergency department with mental health concerns, they shouldn't be sitting there for any length of time. We need to connect them with a mental health professional. So we have a program that's been in place since 2016 called the Integrated Care Plan, where our physical health and behavioral health managed care organizations jointly develop a treatment plan for people with serious persistent mental illness. And the whole goal there is that when when either one of them knows about something that the other one should know about, they talk to each other and they try to make sure we're connecting them with the most appropriate professionals.
We have less than a minute left. I want to thank all four of you for being with us today. This very, very important topic. Secretary Mara, I ask you this question. With this initiative, anything, there has to be an endpoint. What does success look like?
I think if we can help break down the stigma by getting Pennsylvanians to talk about mental health issues just like they talk about physical health issues, if people in 6 months, a year, in a couple years are talking about these issues with their family and friends, if they feel less alone and they feel like it's okay to say I'm not okay and to seek out help, if we get to the point where Pennsylvanians feel like that, I think that's success.
Representative Schlossberg, I have 20 seconds left. Someone hearing this may be in a crisis right now, wants treatment. What can they do?
First of all, know that you're not alone. Second of all, if you're in immediate danger, call 911 immediately. Third of all, you can contact your primary care physician or your county human services office in order to find help. There is help available always for anyone. Please just reach out.
Thank you very much, all four of you, for being with us today.